Coming up later on Air Talk, the Triple Play with me to preview the three consecutive games between the Dodgers and the Rays in this 2020 World Series. A. Martinez and Nick Roman will be with me later this hour. We'll talk about what comes up in this afternoon's 5 o'clock start, tomorrow and Sunday as well. Of course, series tied a game apiece. And coming up a little bit later this hour, we'll be looking at two gondola proposals for Los Angeles, aerial trams, one of which proposed to go up to Griffith Park and to the Hollywood sign, maybe stop at the observatory. The other, which would take Dodger fans from Union Station up to the top of Elysian Park and to the stadium entrance. We'll talk about where those two projects sit. Also coming up, Film Week next hour. I'll be joined by critics Christy Lemire and Peter Rayner. We'll review Spike Lee's new musical documentary, David Byrne's American Utopia, which highlights Byrne's 2019 Broadway show. Also, Sacha Baron Cohen is back as Borat in Borat's subsequent movie film. And Sofia Coppola of Lost in Translation, the writer-director, her new film is On the Rock, starring Bill Murray and Rashida Jones. Those are just three of many films our critics review on Film Week. But right now, in a sense, we review last night's presidential candidate debate. The second of two was scheduled to be the third, of course. The second canceled, largely as a result of President Trump contracting COVID-19. I don't know about you, but I was dreading last night's debate. I had to watch it, of course, but I was expecting the worst, given what happened with the first debate, which I found almost unwatchable. Last night was significantly better, I thought, in part because of the cutting off of the microphones during the initial question and candidate solo answer. Also, I thought because of the stellar work of the moderator, Kristen Welker, of NPR News. People are very quick to criticize moderators, which I understand, but having done more debates than I can possibly count and moderating them, it is a difficult job, I must say, particularly when you're dealing with the President Trump of the first debate. Let's listen here as a moment where moderator Kristen Welker pressed President Trump on the vaccine for COVID-19 timeline.
You have said a vaccine is coming soon, within weeks now. Your own officials say it could take well into 2021 at the earliest for enough Americans to get vaccinated. And even then, they say the country will be wearing masks and distancing into 2022. Is your timeline realistic?
No, I think my timeline is going to be more accurate. I don't know that they're counting on the military the way I do, but we have our generals lined up, one in particular that's the head of logistics. And this is a very easy distribution for him. He's ready to go as soon as we have the vaccine.
And Joe Biden's follow-up.
This is the same fellow who told you this is going to end by Easter last time. This is the same fellow who told you that, don't worry, we're going to end this by the summer. We're about to go into a dark winter, And he has no clear plan, and there's no prospect that there's going to be a vaccine available for the majority of the American people before the middle of next year.
All right. Those just a couple of examples of last night's debate. And joining me now to talk about it, national political reporter for The Washington Post, Isaac Stanley Becker. Isaac, thank you for being with us. It struck me that President Trump must have been very aware of those polls that came out after the first debate in which he lost support.
He did seem to try to take a different tack and to frustrate expectations. And many people thought that he was going to go into this with the same really confrontational, aggressive, and, you know, interrupting strategy. And we saw a somewhat different approach. There were a number of interruptions, but the cutting of the mic certainly helped there.
Yeah, he just seemed to be a largely very different demeanor from the president in last night's debate. NBC's Welker, I thought, also did well. And it seemed like the reviews of her performance, Isaac, were quite strong.
I think that's right. I think that there was certainly fewer interruptions and less overt truculence. I wouldn't say that the debate was terribly more coherent than the first one because, you know, we didn't really see the candidates engage all that substantively in some of the policy issues presented. We saw more so a clash over, you know, basic issues of fact and worldview, and whether experts should be trusted, whether the statements of the president needed to be rooted in the expert guidance of his own scientific experts, or whether the American people should trust his, you know, vague and unsubstantiated notions.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how, you know, talking about the public option in the healthcare plan and, you know, Trump trying to make the point of what that would mean for people's private insurance. He didn't quite bring the circle full along and complete that argument. But and for me, that's kind of the frustration of these debates, is there are full arguments that you can make against the positions of both men. But very rarely does that circle get completed in one of these debates.
That's right. It also has been an interesting moment for the former vice president there when he's been responding to these attacks on healthcare. And he's very, very forcefully, you know, presented his victory in the primary as evidence that he is not susceptible to these attacks on eliminating private insurance. In fact, he says this is why he was victorious, because he distanced himself from the proposals of such people as Bernie Sanders and others who wanted to, you know, tack further to a left-wing position on healthcare. But whether that is able to convince the president or stop him from lobbying these attacks is not so clear.
Well, all the president has to say in response to that, though, is, Joe, they may have well been voting for you because they saw you as more electable. Not necessarily the progressives are giving up what they think are important principles for health care and for shifting the American economy. And so you as the leader of your whole party, you're going to have to be taking that perspective in serious. There are ways that he can absolutely respond to this, but it just doesn't seem like he, at least in the moment of the debate or on the campaign trail, has the ability to fully give that argument.
Sure, and there are certainly left-wing activists and others who hope to pressure a possible President Biden into supporting a single-payer system, and that is a fair argument. As for whether Joe Biden is some sort of Trojan horse for left-wing factions in the party, that seems a bit far-fetched.
We're talking with the Washington Post's Isaac Stanley Becker. He's national political reporter. Also with us, Josh Clark, the head debate coach at Montgomery Bell Academy, a private 7th through 12th grade school in Nashville. He's contributor to the book, The State of the Union Is, Memorable Addresses of the Last 50 Years. Coach Clark, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it. What was your analysis from a debate perspective of how the two candidates did?
Well, if I'm rendering a reason for decision, I think each party walks away pretty pleased with the performance of their candidate. I think that a lot of the Republicans were turned off by President Trump's interruptions from the first debate. And I think he understood the polls and understood kind of the financial backing that came with Biden after the first debate. And I think he changed his strategy. But I also think that Joe Biden showed an incredibly strong performance. And I think the Democratic Party is also very pleased with his performance.
Yeah, you know, this is not necessarily his strength, the debate format. He's much more of an in-person kind of candidate, it seems to me. But I thought this was one of his stronger performances in debates, Josh.
Yes, I agree. I think Joe was more coherent. He was better at putting out his messages. I think a couple of the things that really stuck were, first, his continuing message of unifying the country. I think that really strikes a chord with moderate voters, and it's something that kind of everyone is tired of, kind of the rancor associated with partisan politics currently, as well as touting his ability to solve COVID in the face of very little plan that currently exists facing this dark winter that he referred to. I will say, if there was a weakness for Joe Biden, it might have been the oil remark, but I understand that a lot of his Kamala Harris and some of his proxies are helping clarify that message today in Pennsylvania.
Josh Clark joining us, who's head debate coach at Nashville's Montgomery Bell Academy, contributor to the book, The State of the Union Is, Memorable Addresses of the Last 50 Years. I also want to thank Washington Post national political reporter Isaac Stanley Becker for providing his thoughts about last night's presidential candidates debate. That's it, just two that were held, certainly different in terms of the tone of the two debates. You can share your feedback on the debate, as many people already are, at kpecc.org. You can also share on Twitter and let us know what you thought about the debate last night. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. Film Week coming up at 11 o'clock. Our critics review David Byrne's American Utopia. You'll want to hear what they say about Spike Lee's new musical documentary of Byrne's 2019 Broadway show. And Sofia Coppola of the critically acclaimed film Lost in Translation works again with Bill Murray. He stars in her film On the Rocks.